Hey, Bible nerds, this is Dr. Manny Arango, and I'm your host for the Bible Department podcast powered by Arma. This podcast follows a Bible reading plan we created to help you read the entire Bible in a year. You can head to the show notes or thebibledepartment.com to download our reading plan and join the journey.
I'm excited. I feel like I'm excited about every day, but I'm really excited about today. We are in Genesis 18 through 20. If you haven't done the reading, if you haven't done Genesis chapter 18, 19, and 20, just go ahead and do the reading now. Pause the video, pause the audio, go get the reading done. If you have done the reading, let's dive in, okay? So chapter 18 opens, and the thing that is going to get highlighted, the context clue that I want to give everybody, is that Abraham has extreme generosity. Extreme hospitality. First of all, let's give context. The man has just been circumcised, okay? The dude is in pain. And we're going to get one word is going to get used three times. And I've got to kind of give some cultural context here. Because in a Semitic culture or Middle Eastern culture, patriarchs do not run. It's actually what makes the story of the prodigal son. Just mind-blowing. You have this patriarch, like, running towards his son as his son is returning. And so patriarchs just don't run. Like, that is culturally a big no-no, okay? But if you get Genesis chapter 18, verse 2, it says, Abraham looked up and saw three men standing nearby. When he saw them, he hurried from the entrance of his tent to meet them and bowed low to the ground. The fact that he's hurrying is huge. And as Western readers, we may just breeze right past that as though it is not that important. Verse 6. So Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah. Quick, he said, get three seahs of the finest flour and knead it and bake some bread. Okay. And then we're going to get this one more time in the next verse, verse 7. Then he ran to the herd and selected a choice tender calf and gave it to a servant who hurried to prepare it. So we get the word hurried three times and the word ran one time. There is a pace to this story that is fast. Abraham is playing zero games. Remember, the man just got circumcised and he's scurrying around, hurrying around, running. Incredible, like just a spirit of hospitality. This man is doing the most. I mean, rolling out the red carpet for these three guests. Next little, I guess this, you can call this a nerdy nugget. Next little kind of piece of this situation is that Abraham is going to tell Sarah, quick, get three seahs of finest flour and knead it and bake some bread. Now, I've looked at a couple different references. Some say this is 36 pounds of flour. Some say it could be more. Okay, so I just went with the most conservative estimate for a seah, which is going to be 36 pounds of flour, which I think is something crazy. Like, it's going to end up making, I think, 24 loaves of bread. Like, this is a ridiculous amount of food that Abraham and Sarah and their servants are going to make for these guests. The next just like piece of information that you really need to kind of wrap your mind around is that there are 318 servants that live in Abraham's house. Okay, so like Abraham ain't like an empty nester. Like, this man has servants on servants on servants. And so, but he's the one hurrying. He's the one running. The text wants to paint a picture of honor and hospitality and urgency. And there, I mean, just an elaborate amount of food. Now, hospitality is going to be a chief value in a Middle Eastern context, in a Semitic context, in a context of people who are wandering around in a more of a nomadic lifestyle. Even to this day, I've been to Israel four times, and hospitality is at the tippity top of just like values, like how you treat guests, how you treat people who are under the protection of your roof. Okay, so the Obviously, Abraham and Sarah are going to get promised a son. Sarah's going to laugh. But really, this immediately gets into this bargaining or this bartering that happens between God and Abraham. This is what the Lord said in verse 20. The outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is so great and their sins so grievous that I will go down and see if what they have done is as bad as the outcry that has reached me. If not, I will know. The men turned away and went to Sodom, but Abraham remained standing before the Lord. Then Abraham approached him and said, will you sweep away the righteous with the wicked? And so he starts at 50. He goes to 45. He goes all the way down this whole bartering thing. And then for the sake of 20, I will not destroy it. May the Lord not be angry, but let me speak just once more. What about 10? He says, for the sake of 10, I will not destroy it. When the Lord had finished speaking with Abraham, he left and Abraham returned home. So there seems to be like an abrupt ending, right? They get to 10 and Abraham doesn't even have the chance to ask, well, what about 5? What about 2? What about 1? Okay. It immediately cuts to the two angels now arrive at Sodom. And here's our nerdy nugget, okay? Because you got to do a little bit of counting to figure this out. Why is it that the scene immediately shifts from a conversation between God and Abraham to the two angels are now in Sodom? What has caused that shift? Because I would say it's actually not a change in the story. The narrative is continuing. But I do think that what we get starting in chapter 19 is actually God answering Abraham's question of whether or not there are 10. Okay, so let's just do a little bit of counting. It's our nerdy nugget for the day. Let's do some counting. Lot and his wife would be two people. The Bible lets us know that Lot has two son-in-laws. So that's four people. If he got two son-in-laws, that means he's got two married daughters. He also has two sons, so that's we're up to 8 people. And if he has two son-in-laws, that means in addition to the two married girls, he offers his two unmarried daughters to the mob. So there's actually 10 people in Lot's household, including him. So Abraham gets down to 10, but really, that's Lot and his family, okay? It takes a little bit of counting, like the Bible's not going to spell that out for you. And so now Lot is running around his family trying to get them to leave. He's trying to get his sons and his son-in-laws and his whole crew to kind of leave. But the men inside reached out and pulled Lot back into the house and shut the door. And they struck the men who were at the door, young and old, with blindness. Okay, the two men went to Lot and said, do you have anyone else here? Sons-in-law, sons, daughters, or anyone else in the city who belongs to you? Get them out. So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law, who were pledged to marry his daughters. He said, hurry and get out of this place. But his sons-in-law thought he was joking. On and on and on. Even his wife looks back. This is verse 26. But Lot's wife looks back, and she became a pillar of salt. So the scene cuts, and actually, God goes, the 10 righteous that you thought were righteous are actually not righteous. Now, what then? This leads us to actually our timeless truth. So kind of things have kind of gone really like they flowed well today. I'm proud of myself. Okay. The context clues flowed right into the nerdy nugget and the nerdy nugget is flowing right into our timeless truth. How does God define righteous? Well, it seems like God defines righteous by a righteous person's ability to influence others. That influence is tied to righteousness. That I'm not righteous if I can't influence people to also be righteous. So when Abraham says, will you not spare it for 50? Will you not spare it for 10? Will you not spare it for 20? What he's saying is, well, if there's 50, then that means that the city's not wicked. That means that there's hope for the city to progress, because if there's 50 people, then eventually there'll be 55, eventually there'll be 60, because righteousness spreads. Righteousness is influential. People are attracted to righteousness. Righteousness is not just, well, I didn't break the rules, and I'm minding my business and I didn't break any of the rules. So you can punish them. Don't punish me because I didn't break any of the rules. That's actually like arrogance. That's I didn't. Well, did you influence anybody else to be a rule follower? Did you influence anybody else to be righteous? Did you influence anybody around you to love God the way you love God? Now, for God, it seems like righteousness isn't in you following the rules as an individual, but righteousness is about your ability to actually influence the people that are around you. And Lot has spent year after year after year amongst wicked people that he's not able to win for the Lord. He's not able to influence. He's not able to rub off on them. And this is actually the downfall of Lot, that he's attracted to this city in the first place. He lives amongst these people. And at no point in time does he have a positive influence on the people who he is dwelling amongst. Family, the wait is over. My brand new book, Crushing Chaos, is out now and available everywhere books are sold. Literally today, I walked into a Barnes & Noble and I signed a bunch of copies at a physical location. So you can grab this book at a physical Barnes & Noble, or you can go to a Books A Million or Amazon or anywhere books are sold and grab a copy. If you enjoy reading the Bible from an ancient perspective, if you understand that the beauty of Scripture is actually knowing it in context, then you'll love this book. And if there's any chaos in your personal life, I think that reading the Bible from an ancient perspective can actually help to crush the chaos in your life. I think this book is going to be a New York Times bestseller. I really do. I think we wrote a good one. I think you should get a copy today. All right, back to the episode. Man, if there's a timeless truth for us today, it's that your righteousness is not just revealed in your ability to follow the rules and mind your business, but your righteousness is revealed in your ability to influence other people in the direction of righteousness. That righteousness includes leadership, especially leadership over those in your home. The stories here are actually juxtaposed to one another. There's hospitality in both elements. There's households in both elements. Literally, the two angels go from Abraham to Sodom while God stays to barter or to bargain with Abraham. This now introduces this idea of what's called a righteous intercessor. And when we get to the book of Exodus, this theme is going to get picked up a ton, that if there's a righteous intercessor, that God will actually hold back his judgment, hold back his wrath. There's also, I don't have time to really get into it, there's so many parallels between the story of Sodom and Gomorrah and God banishing Adam and Eve from the Garden of Eden. So many parallels. About 8 parallels that I counted just as I was studying. I don't have time to get into every single parallel, but tons and tons of parallels. There are angels, right? Angels guarding the entrance back into the Garden of Eden. Angels that are on their way to Sodom. The flaming sword that we see guarding the entrance back into Edom is that flaming sword. That same word gets used for the raining down of fire that is going to happen upon Sodom. There's tons of parallels in the story, but Abraham is concerned, is sure that there must be 10 righteous, because I know that there's at least 10 people in my nephew's household. But the reality is that there aren't 10 righteous, because even the people in Lot's household are actually wicked, which is ultimately proven in what his daughters do. They get him drunk and they have sex with him, and you are going to get the foundation of the Moabites and the Ammonites as a result of Lot having sex with his daughters while he is drunk. Here's what they say. Last night I slept with my father. let's get him to drink wine again tonight, and you go in to sleep with him so that we can preserve our family line through our father. I mean, that is just absolutely disgusting. My stomach is actually turning. It says this, so they got their father to drink wine that night also. Who gets drunk with their daughters? Like, that is just absolutely wild. And the younger daughter went in and slept with him. Again, he was not aware of it when she laid down or when she got up. So both of Lot's daughters became pregnant by their father. The older daughter had a son, and she named him Moab. He is the father of the Moabites of today. The younger daughter also had a son, and she named him Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the Ammonites of today. So that is that. We're going to get this last story, this ridiculousness with Abraham. He's going to try to pass his wife off as his sister one more time, as if he hasn't like done that enough. And that's actually going to get picked up in Isaac's story way later. All right. I gave you some context clues. I gave you some nerdy nuggets. And our timeless truth is that if you are going to be a righteous person, then you are going to have to be an influential person. You're going to have to be a leader. That leadership and influence are actually non-negotiable parts of being righteous. That it's not enough to just watch out for you and yours, but you actually have to be the kind of person that lets your light shine, that is salt and light every single place that you go. That is our video for day 87. Hey, I'll see you right here for day 88 as we dive into Genesis chapter 21 to 23. Love you guys so much. If you're on a streak, don't break that streak. If you're not on a streak, well, today is a good day to start one. So if you did the reading for today, do it again tomorrow and let's get on a streak. I'll see you right here tomorrow. I'm proud of you. Love you guys. Thank you so much for joining me on the Bible Department podcast. If this episode was helpful, it would mean the world to me if you'd give us a follow, rate and review the show, and don't forget to share. You can learn more about the show at thebibledepartment.com and find us on Instagram at the Bible Department. If you want to dive deeper into the Bible, you can get free access to our library of courses at thebibledepartment.com. We'll see you back here tomorrow. What if I told you that what you're learning in this video was just the tip of the iceberg? The Bible Department is actually powered by Arma. What is Arma? I'm so glad you asked. Arma is an online subscription-based platform that we designed to help people, everyday people, learn the Bible for themselves. We started Arma so that anybody, anywhere, could have access to trustworthy and entertaining Bible and theology content. In addition to this podcast, we have over 60 courses on individual books of the Bible, on theology topics, and on some hot topics like homosexuality, tithing, and women in ministry. But really, Arma is a community of people that I've gotten to know, a community where thousands of people are currently finding family, asking questions, and nerding out on the Bible together. If you want a community to read the Bible with you this year, or if you want to dive into some deeper theological content, or if you want more exclusive access to me and the entire Arma team, how about you go to thebibledepartment.com. I'll be sure to post the link in the description of this video. Let's make this your year to become a Bible nerd.